This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You can imagine hundreds, thousands, and millions of these things deployed all over the world and connected to the internet, creating this real-time information stream that helps us take the pulse of our environment in this really new and exciting way.
Galileo said we should, quote, measure what is measurable and make measurable what is not so. This week on Sea Change Radio, we take a look at two ways that people are trying to apply that wisdom to climate change. First, we speak to Davida Herzl, the CEO and co-founder of Aclima, a San Francisco-based company that refers to itself as a Fitbit for the planet. Herzl explains how Aclima's technology works, how the company makes money, and the opportunities that lie ahead as the industry of measuring air pollution evolves. Then we dig into the Sea Change Radio archives and revisit our discussion with James Leeton, the research director of Carbon Tracker, a British nonprofit that analyzes the risks of fossil fuel investment and presents findings to the financial sector with the objective of limiting future greenhouse gas emissions. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Davida Herzl. She's the co-founder and CEO of Aclima. Davida, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Why don't you give our listeners a quick snapshot of your company, Aclima? What do you guys do?
We are making the invisible visible on a grand scale. The way we're doing that is that we are using advances at the convergence of sensors and ubiquitous computing, cloud computing, and machine learning to build large-scale sensor networks that take the pulse of our environment in real time. So we're able to measure real-time air pollution and climate change emissions at the hyperlocal level with our sensor networks in ways that haven't been possible before. We're building what we call a Fitbit for the planet, and we think that this the new information and the new insights that we're generating will help us create healthier environments that support people and the planet.
Give us an example of Aclima's technology in action, if you can.
Sure. So you may have heard about our work with Google. We've been working with the Street View team over at Google to instrument their vehicles with our environmental intelligence platform. And we drive around cities with the instrumented Street View cars to take snapshots of pollution, of air pollution, with block-by-block resolution at the entire city scale. So imagine being able to have maps, not just of traffic, but to have air quality data directly displayed over your map to understand what your exposure might look like at any given moment on any given day to the pollutants that are most harmful to human health.
So, what was the inspiration behind putting this company together?
So, I had actually spent some time working in the climate change community, and this was about a little bit over 10 years ago, and was frustrated that the conversation about climate change was about what was happening in the North Pole. It was on these very abstract time scales, but also global scales that most people don't think about, everyday people don't think about. And I saw a missed opportunity to reframe the conversation about climate change as really being about health, right? Because the same pollutants that we are putting into the air that are changing our climate are affecting human health and leading to massive and global respiratory disorders. We're seeing some of the highest rates of asthma ever among school-aged children, and that if we focused on this through the health dimension, that we could change that conversation. And so, how do we bring this home? We bring this home by giving people access to information. about what's happening in their environment at any particular time. And so that was really what gave birth to the idea for building Acclima and for really to really start working on the technology that would enable us to bring this measurement everywhere, in buildings and homes and schools at the city scale, but also in enterprise. Now increasingly companies are understanding that environmental risk is financial risk, and now they managing emissions and managing what they're putting into the air is actually seen as is being seen as critical, and there hasn't been this kind of measurement capability at this kind of cost profile available before, and so we're seeing a lot of opportunity to really change the conversation, and so that was the original intent, and we've been working to deliver on that.
Now I want to dive into the technology soon, but first explain, this is usually kind of a service that you would see a government agency or a university embark upon, but you're a private business. What is Acclima's business model? How are you going to make money off of this?
Sure. So first of all, we think that's actually one of the most exciting elements of the moment in technology today, is that suddenly, and you've seen this in satellites, for example, right? It used to be that only NOAA or NASA could build and deploy satellites, but now we're seeing new private companies that are able to do it cheaper, better, and more quickly, because the technology has really gotten to the point where the private sector can take on these big challenges now for the benefit of society. And from our perspective, business is one of the most powerful ways to bring solutions to the market at scale. And so we refer to ourselves as a mission-driven, impact-focused business, where we sell our sensor networks and all of the analytics that come out of those sensor networks as a service. We sell that into three different segments of the market, in the commercial building sector. So we actually deploy our sensor networks indoors for large companies like Google. Also, Google actually hosts one of the world's largest sensor network for indoor air quality measurement, which we've deployed for them several years ago. It processes 500 million data points per day, and that is sold as a service. And then we also sell our services into industrial applications. And now in smart cities, and we're doing this in partnership with big customers like Google, but other fleets as well, who see value in generating this kind of data for the public. And so there's a component of our work that is public and open, and then there's components of our work that we use to generate revenue that enables us to create a self-sustaining model for scaling our measurements and bringing more benefit to the world.
Now, let's just assume that I'm a contractor and I'm building a big building in Fresno, and I would like LEED certification for my building. So it's still in the architectural blueprint stage. When would I engage your company and maybe walk us through the entire engagement from when it's actually, when the building exists? How would I continue to reap the benefits of my association with your company?
So you would call us up, and so if you were building something from the ground up, we would work with you to design a sensor network that would help you meet your objectives. And so for example, we get a lot of customers that say, we don't just want to provide green buildings that are energy efficient, we want to ensure that we're creating healthy spaces. How do we use data to make sure that we are providing a consistent good and healthy air quality, but also comfortable space that supports my occupants? And if you think about the basic function of a building, it's meant to create safe and healthy space, for productive space for people. And so we've actually, because of all of the measurement that we've done for so many years now, we have a lot of insights into how you might design space to support those objectives. And then once you've actually built the building, we deploy the sensor networks in your building to ensure that over the long term and continuously, those buildings are meeting your objectives. Because it turns out that buildings are really dynamic systems. The moment you put people into them, they start to change, right? Because people breathe, they're bringing in pollutants, they open windows. There's a lot that happens in buildings that makes them highly dynamic, and real-time information really helps you manage buildings in a new way. And the way I sometimes talk about it is, you know, we've spent a lot of money on energy metering, and so we understand, you know, what energy usage looks like, but there's a missing meter. We don't understand how the indoor environment is actually performing. We don't have any measurement infrastructure in most buildings around the world. And so that's really what we're helping our customers do.
I'm just not made for the heat. This is my first summer in New York, and it's practically killing me.
Too hot. This town is too hot.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Davida Herzl. She's the co-founder and CEO of Acclima. So why don't you walk us through a little bit more of how the technology works? You've explained how you can measure the environmental impact of a building, but you've also said that you work with these street view cameras and cars that are driving around through Google Maps. So those are two very, one is mobile and one is stationary. Give us some kind of a bird's eye view of the range of ways that you can deploy sensors.
Yes. So our sensors, we have a whole family of devices, and our sensors can be deployed in the stationary setting, so hanging on walls indoors. They can also be deployed in a stationary setting outdoors. So people talk about smart cities, and typically what people think about is light poles and connected infrastructure. And so we can deploy them in stationary settings as well. But one of the applications that we're most excited by is the application of our devices on mobile, on vehicles. Because once you have a vehicle driving around a city, you can actually cover a lot of ground really quickly and take a snapshot of what's happening in a city at scale. And so what we do is we have sensing devices, and we measure, today we can measure most of the criteria pollutants under the EPA, under the U.S. Clean Air Act, as well as critical climate change gases, and those devices go inside the street view vehicle. We have a sampling line that samples air from the outside. Everything is connected to the internet and the cloud, and so all of the data as cars are driving through a city are sending the data to the cloud and to our backend systems in real time. And as the cars drive through the city, as they do multiple drives, all of those data points get stitched together. We use really sophisticated algorithms to, one, make sure that the data quality is meeting the highest data quality standards so that we can rely on this data, and two, stitching it together in a way that you can actually see on a map, you know, from all of these collected data points, where are the persistent hotspots? How do patterns change over time? And we generate air quality maps with block by block resolution that enable us to understand air quality in this really personal, hyper-local way that changes how we understand our environment. And so it's a really transformative and exciting time for us, because we're starting to put these maps into the world, and we're really excited about the implications.
Do you work with governments or transportation agencies? Like when in San Francisco, BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, has a Spare the Air Day. Are they getting data from companies like yours?
So not today. Today, they are relying on under the U.S. Clean Air Act, there was a system of regional monitoring that was set up, and it's run by local agencies through a relationship with the EPA. And that network has been really good at giving us background levels of air quality. So if you pull up an app and you try to ask, you know, what is air quality today, what you're seeing is an average from an entire, what's called an airshed, right? The entire region. But it turns out that air quality is much more hyper-local and variable. And so what we're doing is trying to really fill in the dots with that hyperlocal information. And our vision is that one day governments and decision makers, policy makers will use this data and the information we generate to drive decision making. And we do have partnerships with the United States EPA. Actually, we have a cooperative research and development agreement with them where we're working together to define data quality standards for this new approach to measuring air quality with small sensors, but also to explore the kinds of things that this data can tell us.
Can you also partner with potential competitors in other countries or other cities? Because you're only in California right now, right?
So right now we are we've started. We're using California as our launch pad, but our vision is to go much more broad and ultimately global with our solution to bring this to people everywhere.
I guess my question though is: are there competitors, and can they help fill in that map that you were saying is hyper local? If you're, let's say, running Carbon Tracker and you're a non-government organization and you're trying to work on global climate change issues, can people plug in ACLIMA data and other competitors into their formula?
Yeah. So, and we, you know, right now, I mean, we look at the state of the market and we really see an opportunity to create an ecosystem of users and partners. And our mantra is to partner, because we really want to accelerate impact. This is information that the world needs now. And so, yes, there's a number of partnership strategies that we're exploring today, and ultimately aspects of our data that will be made available so that people can explore, these kinds of, you know, applications that we haven't thought about yet. And so that is part of our mission and approach.
Can you give us an idea of the competitive landscape? Who else does something like you guys?
Yeah, so that's why I would say they're not really, you know, I wouldn't call them competitors. They're different. We see governments, for example, as potential partners, because we're able to generate data, this kind of data, at a much lower cost than traditional approaches, leveraging all of these new technologies. And so we see governments as partners, and our goal is really to help empower them and to work together. And a lot of, I don't know if you've heard of the study from the WHO from 2016 that basically said that over 90% of the world's population is breathing unhealthy air. And if you look at the map of the distribution of air pollution, you see that the worst air pollution is in areas where there is no measurement, because traditional approaches to measuring are really expensive. It's difficult to deploy. Traditional monitoring equipment is expensive and requires a lot of labor. And so in countries where you see some of the worst issues, you see no measurement infrastructure. And so, of course, those are opportunities for us to partner with local governments and citizens to bring this kind of data to them to help to really help improve management, right? The thesis that measurement is the found. You can't manage what you don't measure. Is the foundation of what we're doing. It's to improve management. We need to bring data to decision makers and to the public.
Now, would a company like Acclimo work with vehicle manufacturers?
Absolutely.
And maybe give us kind of an idea of where things are moving in the auto space, because this seems like anybody who's had to spend an hour getting their car smogged can see the real advantage of something real time, where you could maybe get a notice from the DMV saying, hey, your car is not just that it's expired and it's time for a new smog thing. We've actually just detected that you're pumping out a lot of NO2, like your nitrous oxide levels are out. That's probably going to be a reality pretty soon, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, with transportation being such a, you know, and in cities around the world, seeing, you know, transportation and congestion is one of the biggest issues leading to pollution levels. And so we see all sorts of exciting opportunities like the one, like real-time smog checks. You know, we've whiteboarded big ideas and that is definitely something we've thought about, and automakers and transport, you know, folks involved in the smart vehicle world, are I think looking for all sorts of ways to bring additional value to what they're doing, and this is one way that we can really help cities.
So explain the range of the size of some of the sensors that your team deploys. I mean, are these things just a tiny little chip-sized sensor, or are these heavy? It varies quite a bit when you're measuring a building versus just putting something on a car. But maybe give us an idea of the range of the format of these electronics.
Sure. So the sensor devices, and so we have what's called a sensor node, and inside each sensor node, we populate the nodes with small sensors that sometimes are, you know, the size of a penny, the size of a quarter. These are small sensors compared with the traditional sort of laboratory equipment that can look like, you know, a small refrigerator, right? And so we're able to reduce the size of the sensing component to something that can fit in the palm of your hand. And then when we put them all together into a single device, you know, that's the size of a small shoebox that, you know, can fit in a vehicle. And so we're able to shrink down an entire lab into something that's as, you know, that's as big as a couple of shoeboxes when we put it in a vehicle. And so that's a really transformative change in size, but also in costs. We're seeing, you know, 100x cost reductions from traditional approaches. And so suddenly you can imagine having, you know, not just tens of these sensors like you might see, you know, with traditional measurement equipment in, you know, an entire city. You can imagine hundreds, thousands, and millions of these things deployed all over the world and connected to the internet, creating this real-time information stream that helps us take the pulse of our environment in this really new and exciting way.
She's the co-founder and CEO of Acclima, Davida Herzl. Davida, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by James Leeton. He is the research director for the Carbon Tracker Initiative. James, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Good to be here.
First, tell us what the mission of the Carbon Tracker Initiative is.
So we're looking to align the stock markets with the objectives to tackle climate change, basically, Alex.
And then let's go through some of the bullet points of how you've divided up this enormous goal. You focus mostly on the supply side of carbon, correct?
So I guess what we wanted to do is think about this as an issue of the stock of carbon that we've got, if you like. So the coal and oil and gas that's out there in the ground and under the sea, and what that all adds up to in terms of potential carbon emissions. And basically, we were set up because some people had this question in their heads. They really wanted to know, you know, if we burn all of that stuff that's out there, you know, in the Arctic and under the sea and across the world, how many degrees of warming would that take us to? And they thought, well, you know, someone must have done this research. There must be an answer out there. And they couldn't find it. There didn't seem to be a kind of clear answer for them to work with, and particularly in relation to their investments and understanding, you know, how much was on the stock exchange in New York, in London, in Hong Kong, in Sydney, and so on. So yeah, they eventually got some money together to do the research, and so we got some data together on reserves owned by all those companies listed on the stock exchanges, and turned them into carbon dioxide and worked out what would be emitted if we did burn them all going forward, and compared that essentially to a budget of what the limit is if we want a decent chance of achieving the 2-degree goal of limiting climate change. So essentially it's like, you know, having a financial budget that you can only spend this much, and how much can we burn to get us there.
So give us an example of a larger company like Chevron or Exxon, or which has a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, or a coal company like Arch Coal. How do you begin to approach them and then dig into their numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's not rocket science. It's really just coming up with the different types of oil. So we distinguish between, for example, tar sands in Canada, because that's, you know, more carbon intensive. So the emissions would be higher from extracting and burning that, as opposed to, you know, a kind of light crude from the Middle East, for example. So you adjust the carbon content in that way. And similarly, you have different types of coal as to whether it's a really kind of one of the sort of dirtier coals, or whether it's, a slightly lighter one. So it's just, using the data that's out there. It's not that difficult, you know. It spawned some understanding in terms of do the math, and it really is just doing some simple math in a way that we think should be mandatory for all the companies to do for us, rather than us having to do it ourselves.
So you're basically holding the oil, gas, and coal companies accountable for the use of their products, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think having sort of worked out that, you know, essentially get the revenues that these companies get from selling their products are dependent on someone wanting them to burn at the other end. So if you limit the emissions, then that has a knock-on effect for the companies that they're no longer going to get all those revenues, because there'll be less demand, the price may drop. And also, you know, there's a question, I think, really going forward, which is where the wasted capital comes in, is, well, if we know we've already got more than enough, then why does it make sense to keep pouring more and more capital into finding more reserves? Isn't that a waste of capital? And couldn't we think of something better to do with it?
He's the research director for the Carbon Tracker Initiative, James Leeton. James, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Dirty Dozen Brass Band, Prince Buster, and Mr. Sadhead.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.